Get your favorite libation, your favorite snack. The Geocaching Podcast is coming at you. Oh, right about if I push this little button right here now.
You want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 394, recorded live on March 18th, 2015. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat, with
Stevens at Infinitum
and Taz427.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. And also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by cache-advance.com for all your geocaching needs. Cache-advance.com. Go find it. Well, folks, if you've noticed, if you're watching the video right now, you can see that we are one person short tonight. Mr. Scott Burks is he's out on assignment. He is not feeling well, and we hope Scott gets better really, really soon. And I didn't get too many details, so I don't know if it's, you know, the plague or, you know, some kind of, you know, lung disease as far as bronchitis or what have you. But we hope you get well real soon, Scott. All right, guys, good stuff. So who ate pie this week?
Oh,
Mr. Corey, how's it going, man?
I ate lots of pie, and it was delicious.
Awesome. Did any of it have to do with geocaching?
Yes and no.
Okay. The pie was an in generalization then.
Saturday, yes, it was definitely geocaching related, but I took some home with me and had pie Sunday as well. So it was left over, but it was good.
All right, because there's always room for pie.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you. Good stuff. Mr. Chad, get any chance to celebrate? Did you get your souvenirs?
Oh, yeah. I got three of them, actually. So I got two pie souvenirs and another mega souvenir for the Texas Challenge.
Oh, man. And we're going to go about that in a little bit because it's quite the adventure he has done. And we'll talk about that in just a smidge. Let's see. Pi Day, yep, had a lot of fun. Went out with wife Amy. It poured. It was raining cats, dogs, and cows even. I mean, it was pretty bad. But we managed to go out and get ourselves a mystery cache for one part of the pie puzzle. And then attended and had a lot of fun with a bunch of geocachers in Durham, North Carolina for our event. And if you didn't know, there was something on each of the souvenirs.
There was special
that could
pie.
Take you. Yes, that was the mystery of pie. So if you looked really close and put them together, you figured out that there was a special area on the interwebs that you could go to get some interesting information and even see Mr. Jeremy Irish get smacked soupy sales style. I'm just saying. Cool stuff. Mr. Corey, how'd your event go?
You know, it went good. It went better. I had low, you know, I had low will attends up until the week of, and then they just started piling up, and I filled my room I reserved at the good old Perkins restaurant, and turned out really good. And boy, I barely had enough stuff to give away. We had plenty of door prizes to give out. My wife uncovered a bunch of containers that I had downstairs in the basement. She said, "Will you do something with these?" And I'm like, sure. And so we were going through some stuff. She's like, "You can give these away at the event." I'm like, "Oh, yeah, sure." So so that they became door prizes. So
there you go.
It was a lot of fun. We had great time, you know, getting that souvenir. Then, of course, we all ganged up afterwards and hit a lot of puzzles afterwards. There were some new ones, some old ones, and great thing about getting together with the local cashers, we were able to talk about some of the harder ones to find, and I was able to find some ones that really kind of ticked me off for the last year or so. And either with a new pair of eyes or some hints from the cash owners, I was able to knock a few, not all of them. That one that I talked about with you guys that one day.
Yes. What was the solution? Can you even give a rough hint? Was it where you expected?
No, they said the camo was moss, and it's not on either that electrical pole, but it's supposed to be like in between. It's a moss covering, and I went there tapping the ground looking for moss, and I still can't find it. So I've got to go back with the cash owner. She's so dang.
She's going to handhold you there.
I knew it was vegetation.
She's so dang evil. And I've got to take shots so I can show you guys how evil this is, because she says awesome. It's there.
Nemesis caches are the best. I love them.
Oh, yeah.
Until you find them, then it's like, go! But then when you do, it's like, oh, it's just so much fun. Cool stuff. Mr. Taz, you have had an adventure, sir. I've been watching you on the social medias, and holy cow, is there any part of Texas you have not explored now?
The inside of the gator. I haven't been out to El Paso yet, so. but I've been pretty much almost everywhere in Texas. So yeah, I need to get to El Paso someday.
Wow!
Actually, I have been to El Paso, just at the airport.
The state is so big, he can't even remember. That just tells you, you know, that's how big it is. So, so you were a little busy this week.
Oh, yeah. I was only planning on doing about 160 caches to save my 2,000th cache for the 8th cache coming up next week. But I blew right by that. I did about 220 caches, including 80 puzzle finds. Got 3 souvenirs, one for a mega event, the other two, the pie souvenirs, of course. Managed to get a 7 icon day, and that was by accident. I wasn't even going for it, but just happened to notice, hey, got 7 icons today.
That's awesome.
A couple of DTs got knocked off my grid, so now I'm back down to 3 again, left on there. Did 10 live caches in Lubbock, and then when I returned home to Houston on Monday, I took the family to the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo and did 5 more live caches to get a geocoin. All in total, about 1,300 miles of travel around Texas. And did I mention I got my 2,000th find? And it was the mega event. So, you know, another icon there for milestones. So I've got 7 different icons for different official milestones.
Wow, man, and you do it, you do it. You know what, this is perfect, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, because that's basically what we're talking about with the show tonight is travel tips, and I'll tell you what, you did yourself some serious travel there. Excellent stuff. All right, folks, let's move on to the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community. And what's coming up this week on GeoGearheads, it's episode 168, Attending Megas 1. DeBear, the Bad Cup, and Daryl W4 will talk about attending mega events. Join in live to ask your questions and tell your stories at about 9:10 Eastern Time, 6:10 Pacific. Be sure to check them out. But before you do, make sure you stop on by first at the GeoSnippets Reboot Podcast, where tomorrow wife Amy and I are going to be giving good old travel tips as well when it comes to all the different things that you need to do, finding out things for, well, just frankly, just going out and attending mega events. We talked to the fine folks at Geo Woodstock last week, and they're just going to be following right through and blend it in right with the shows that we have with today with the Geocaching Podcast. So be sure to stop on by tomorrow for Geo Snippets Reboot Podcast. All right, we do not have our geocaching question of the day because Lisa is en route right now. Speaking of mega events, she is en route to MOGA. And, you know, I still, that is on my bucket list of getting out there and go check it out. MOGA. So, yeah, we're going to put that on one of these years very, very soon, I know. But we'll be, you know, there's so many different mega events that you can go to. And a lot of times it's just getting to travel, depending on where you are in your local, you know, locale of wherever you're at and how close they are to other mega events usually dictates how it takes to get there, unless you're Chad and you just drive everywhere. I'm just saying. All right. Let's move right on into Geocaching Podcast Episode 394, Geocaching Travel Tips. Now, there are a lot of new geocachers that will be hitting the road and attending geocaching events, doing geocache camping excursions, and other long-distance geo-traveling. Thought it would be a good idea to go out and give some helpful hints for these fine folks, because a lot of you guys do just that. You do a lot of traveling when it comes to getting from here to there. I'm no exception either. So I thought this would be a good time for people to start being prepared, especially a lot of the new geocachers. I found out an interesting tip from the guys from Geo Woodstock 13. Half right now, half of the will attends. This will be the first time that they have ever gone to a Geo Woodstock.
Wow.
That blew me away, at least for as of last week. That's a lot of people hitting the road, going for a mega event. So I thought it'd be kind of cool to go over some of the stuff. Now, Chad, when you go out for this, say for example, for the Texas Challenge, what kind of stuff did you have to do? Are you a fly by the seat of your pants kind of guy, or do you actually get through and get prepared for 1,300 miles worth of traveling?
I'm Mr. List, so I create a list of the things that I'm going to need, including things like water, some spare food, energy bars, that sort of thing. Kind of start off. I like to start off on the safe side, keep myself healthy, hydrated, fed, clothed, emergency kit. You know, those type of basic necessities, what I consider basic necessity for traveling. I also like to look at what's the weather that's going to be there. Do I need to bring warm clothes? Do I need to be in shorts? You know, what kind of environment am I going to be in here? Do I need sunscreen? Well, for me, I need sunscreen if it's cloudy overhead. So, but, you know, making sure that I've got all those basic necessities packed and ready to go before I even start on the geocaching side.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, as far as when it comes to this type of stuff, doing your research, for me, I'm not Mr. List, but I'm definitely Mr. Want to be prepared when it comes to things like this. Knowing where I'm going, knowing what I have to get through to get to where I'm going, and all the different things that can happen. Now, depending on the environment you're in for that, a lot of times you've got to find out things like, and depending on the type of year that you're going, what type of things can you run into? Because if you've got an area and it's in early spring, you know, the weather's got that nice little variance where it's nice and warm right now, but you could be walking square into a blizzard and not even realize it. Those type of things.
Yeah, so you know, it's always nice to have things like emergency blankets with you in case, you know, you break down and the weather turns bad and you know you're going to get a freeze come through there. It's, you know, nice to be prepared. Also making sure that you have your chargers for all your equipment. That way, you know, you need to get emergency services. You don't want your phone to be dead at the time or not being able to charge it up. I personally like to, not only have a charger for the outlets, but also battery backups as well in case, hey, say for some reason blew a tire out in the middle of nowhere and you got to start hiking into town. Well, you want that battery backup with you when you're going in trying to walk 7 miles because you had to get that cemetery way out there where nobody lives.
Yep.
Absolutely. Now, Corey, you do a lot of traveling, too, between Montana, Utah, and a lot of times you take your family with that. What kind of ways do you, when you do that, when you got to do a road trip?
Yeah, well, with that, I tend to be overprepared.
There's overprepared, I'm telling you.
and there's really not. We tend to go to extremes. I mean, if we pack for serious cold, we always have a couple extra blankets in the car. I mean, we always have umbrellas, which are great for heat or for, you know, cold or rain or whatever. And we try to have, you know, three forms of navigation, which is maps, compasses, and GPS units, because GPS will stray sometimes. Keep an updated map, and then a good old compass. I mean, you can't go wrong with a good old compass, because when in doubt, that'll help you in a lot of ways. And then, you know, we will always take a case of water with us. We'll always pack extra food because we don't like to stop. And we will always make extra food with us because when we want to go on a trip, it's more cost effective if you take stuff with you. And it's better for you. I mean, our girls are, their tummies are sensitive. And you have to keep that, you know, when you're on a road trip, at least for my family, you know, with the constant going and longer trips, or even on, for me, when I'm doing a lot of running and gunning as far as geocaching on a long route, my stomach seems to kind of get a little fickle in that sense, you know, I've got to keep a well-balanced diet, and if I'm just filling it with junk, man, I'm not feeling too good by the end of the day. So I've got to make sure I keep up some good sugars, you know, good fruits, good vegetables, solid whole grains, stuff like that. That's not going to, you know, I can't be stopping at every McDonald's and Arby's and stuff like that. That's just going to kill me with a bunch of fried food. So,
see, I'm the exact opposite. I become a complete food junkie when I'm out there. Food for me when I'm on a trip, and I know this sounds, you know, kind of stereotypical for some, food tastes better. It doesn't matter what it is. You, especially when you throw the camping aspect into when you go onto an adventure trip. I tend to be, I don't care whatever it is, I will devour whatever gets put in front of me.
Well, yeah, I'll devour whatever is kind of put in front of me, but I prefer to have like at least one meal a day where it's a good sit down wholesome food, as mm-hmm. opposed to nothing but fried food all day.
Yeah, that's true.
My stomach, if I have, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, that's all McDonald's fast food stuff. I ate more fast food this past weekend than you know, I probably had in the last six months.
Yeah,
I just don't eat fast food in general. So, you know, it loads up heavy on you. And yeah, I'd prefer to have a nice sit down meal, and also snacks like, you know, bananas and yogurt and, you know, stuff that's a little bit healthier for you because of, I'm eating those 1200 calorie Whoppers. you know, it's not going to do good in a day or two.
Yeah. And like Corey said, it is so much better if you go and pre-buy all your snacks and all your food, you know, stuff that's not going to perish as easily,
right,
and pack them in. It's a lot cheaper, and you've got what you know is around. You're not relying on that, you know, gas station out in the middle of nowhere and trying to buy food off of that.
And believe me, I know we're going to be out in the middle of nowhere in Brazil, so I'm I'm bringing some non-perishable energy bars. You know, their energy bars aren't necessarily the most healthful for you, but you know, you need to keep your sugar levels up and stuff when you're out hiking and things. So it's good to have them along in case, you know, your energy levels start dropping. Yeah,
absolutely. Definitely. Now, with water, do you just buy a case or two and throw it in the back, or do you actually do the cooler thing?
Well, I do both. I mean, it depends on the weather. It depends on if it'll sit. I mean, if it'll sit and it's good, if the weather's not too hot, I'll just throw a case in there. But if not, you know, I'll throw a cooler in there, and it sits good because, you know, always make sure you have room for water. If anything, make sure you keep room for water. Make sure you keep room for cool water. It really doesn't matter because as long as you have water, hot water, cold water, you stay hydrated. Liquid. It's gonna taste a whole lot better if you can keep it cold, though.
Oh yeah. Now, one of the things that nobody's brought up yet, and obviously, if you're going on a longer trip, you usually have it with you, but clothes, not necessarily just the extremes, but just extra underwear, extra socks, extra pants, extra shirts, that kind of stuff, because geocachers tend to find out when, you know, Murphy's Law, if something can happen, it will. Yeah.
Exactly. And I came back with, you know, a couple, two or three shirts that weren't used, some underwear and socks that weren't used, and pull them out. And so I was like, why? Like, are those, you know, those need to be washed? Like, no, those are the clean ones. I was a good boy. I put all my dirty ones in the bag, in the, you know, the big grocery bags, and, you know, it's like, so that it didn't mix. But, yeah.
How many days was your trip, by the way?
It was 4 full days. And I mean, we left Thursday at 5 a.m. And then, made it back. We left there on Sunday morning at about 7:30 out of the hotel. We got here at 10 p.m. So we did some caching along the way.
Yeah.
That will prolong a trip. And that's actually a very good note. If you're going to be traveling, if you need to get from point A to point B in a certain amount of hours, what would be a good rough on, depending on how far away a geocache is and how hard it is to find it, I would tack on 20, 25 minutes per cache. Yeah. If you're going in, I have had literally for me to get from Raleigh, North Carolina to Ann Arbor in Michigan takes me usually if I drive straight through, I can do it in 12 hours. I've had 18-hour days with geocaching in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Now, some of the things that that I personally like to do, and I'm curious about you gentlemen as well. I am very big into letting people know, especially if I'm driving by myself on a long trip, of letting people know where I'm going and different ways of doing that. Obviously, if you've got family members that are at home, you want to leave a list of, you know, here's where you can expect me to be by, you know, this particular, if it's a long trip during the day, you can expect me to be here by this time and there by that time, and also to be at your destination by a particular time. So at least they've got a rough as to to where you're supposed to be, letting them know. But I also like having it so that if other people in the social media, either your family or other, there's a lot of people in Twitter that I've found when I go on my trip from going from Raleigh to Michigan, they actually watch just to keep up with how I'm going with getting from one point to the other. And I love that. There are some cool things to do that. Glimpse is one of the ones that I thought was really effective. Mm-hmm. Did either one of you guys mess with Glimpse much before?
Yeah, I use Glimpse occasionally.
Yeah.
I just started using it recently, and I was using it on this trip to let my wife know, because she was interested as to, you know, what routes we were taking and where we're going, and the fact that I was going to be safe and what time I was going to get in, and yada, you know, she wants to the minute what time I'm going to be in. It's like, I'm caching. We think we'll be there by 4. We're probably not going to get there until 8. So somewhere between there, but I would send her out some glimpses, and she was like, it expired on me. It's like, well, yeah, it expires after some certain amount of time. I'll, you know, send you another glimpse.
Exactly. But at least, and there's been different applications over the years that did that, at least it would say, okay, he made it or she made it this far at this particular time. And then so you could kind of at least put the dots together and see how that went with it. Glimpse is really unique because you don't have to actually have the application with you. When you get sent the text, you're sent to a page that literally shows where if both of you are using Glimpse at the same time or multiple people are using Glimpse at the same time, you can literally see where everybody is on the map at the same time as they're converging on wherever you're going. But there is a time limit as far as that particular session goes. Corey, you said you ended up using that before?
Yeah, I've used it. I've used it on a couple different applications when I was ingressing. I used it several times and a couple times during geocaching events, things like that.
That's awesome.
Haven't used it for a while because I haven't done much event-style things while I'm here in Montana. When it comes to geolocation, I do have a way of sending my location out via text.
Is that an app or
that's
something?
That's an easy one to do. What's that?
Is that geolocation thing, is that a text or an app or what is that?
Well, it's actually a Tasker program which you can create yourself through a Tasker which is available through Android. It's more of a creator type of application.
Okay. So cool. So literally, there's other suggestions of different things that you can use. The main thing is letting other people see either real time or close to real time whereabouts you're at.
Mm-hmm. And there's some other apps like Lookout. I have Lookout on my phone and my wife and my son's phone as well. And you can, anytime, if you log into the account, you can pull up the location of any of the phones. So my wife knows that I have it, and my son is capable of using it for her, so she can pull him in. It's like, hey, show me where Daddy is.
Has he been in the same spot too long? Good question. Yeah, excellent stuff. Now, moving on, Taz had talked about this earlier, but phone chargers, this is the other one. Extra cables is huge. When it comes to phone chargers, batteries, things like that. When we were out for Pi Day, I had my one charger that plugs into the cigarette lighter and kept mine going that way. I brought my extra portable charger as well, and my wife was using that. I'm going to be getting a second one, let's put it that way. Because it worked great. It's like, wow, I could take this with me. And it's like, yes, that's kind of how that works. So I'll be getting another one. But they're excellent to have, not only for emergency situations, but just because our electronics uses so much nowadays. Because not only do you have to worry about your smartphone keeping that charge, your tablet keeping that charge, we now have our smartwatches that we need to charge. Right. Doesn't take long to charge them, but you got to have some way of running it. Then you throw in your cameras and all the other things that go on there. They're a good way to go.
Yeah, I like the newer dual with the dual 2.1, 2.1 amp. And that's not a dual 2-amp, but it's a 2.1-amp. Because you'll get them where they'll say it's 2 amps and it's 2 1-amp sockets. A couple of those, I keep one of those as a spare in my actual travel bag with the cables for it, along with two batteries with the cables for them as well, in case. I mean, I've been on the road with geocachers. Can you give me a charge? It's like, pull out the battery here. And another kid, can you give me a charge? Pull out the other battery here. And that way you're not having to unplug your equipment and everything. Cause I like to keep my stuff topped off. And if you're getting in and out of the car on a caching day where you're not using the GPS unit, then your battery can run down pretty quickly, especially on things like Ingress or Munzees. I don't know if anyone here does Munzees, but Yeah, Muncie will suck the juice right out of your phone.
Ingress does too as well. Yep. Yeah, and nobody wants to be the guy or gal that has to hover over the one outlet
right.
to try to get stuff in with the six other people. It's no fun, I'm just saying. Cool stuff. Being prepared or geo-prepared when it goes to actually getting there, what were you using, Chad, for actually turn-by-turn directions getting there? Was it somebody's in an auto GPS, or do you what do you normally use when you go out on your trips?
Normally what I personally use, if I'm on a road trip like this, I kind of plan out the caches, and I use and I dump POIs into my Nuvi and tell it to go to that next cache. But I was with a friend, Houston Control, and he was the one that was actually doing the driving, and he had a Garmin Montana so he had his 64S and his Montana, but the Montana was the one that was navigating us to the caches, and it did a admirable job. Quite often I'll use my Android phone and CGO and tell it to navigate to the cache, and I can do that with Scout as well offline, so I don't have to rely 100% online. Unfortunately, Scout only works on what I believe North America, the maps that you can get for it. So when I go to Brazil, I'll be bringing my Nuvi. My Garmin Oregon 600 will also route me to locations as well.
Yeah, because a lot of times when you go out there, you have your different choices. You've got for iOS and Android. It depends if you use tablets. I have my iPad 2. I've got a mount that attaches to my windshield where I've got Navigon. I like using, when I go on long trips, especially in areas I've never been to before, I like actually using navigation equipment for directions when you're going out. So in other words, when you use that Nuvi, it's made for roads and turn-by-turn exactly. going that way. Same thing with Navigon on the iPad. It's made to be a road-specific type of application. I love using my phone, but by the time you use your phone for the navigation, especially if you're on a multi-hour trip, you're going to burn that puppy down quick, or it's going to get hot, or it's going to be overworked. Something, you know, you're just relying so much on a specific device for everything.
Right.
I like diversifying with things like that. How about you guys?
I don't like relying 100% on my phone, because if you're, number one, if you're using, if relying on it with that something that requires data, that's a big no-no, because yeah. you're gonna find spots where you don't have data. And you can get yourself in big trouble if you're relying on it for navigation with data. Even the stuff with the offline data, like you said, you know, they can get hot, heated up and stuff. I always have my Nuvi with me. I usually have my Garmin Oregon with me as well, so that, you know, those can route me as well.
Yeah.
And roadmaps.
Always, like Corey had said earlier, I am a firm believer, the ultimate backup, having a manual compass and maps. You will be able to get, yes, boys and girls, way back then, people used to travel all across the United States, sometimes without even that. So yep. It's good to have old reliable with you.
So, I mean, the maps are the ultimate backup. Ever since Google Maps released offline maps, I've been using them and had great success with them. I have had a couple hiccups with them where I have ultimately lost, the information due to, a timeout of a certain amount of time, because I hadn't had any kind of data for X amount of, I don't know how long it was, but
right.
Most of the time I've had great success with the offline. I do have tablet, I do have phone, and between those two, I've had great success. I will go ahead and put the map on a tablet and allow it to turn off or dim out in between any major junction,
mm-hmm.
and I'll just route that to my watch now. And
yep. I love that.
Just even turn the display off. And really, the data, Verizon did me good. I yelled at them. I got mad. They threw me 30 gigs for a real good deal. So, I mean, I got 30 gigs on my plan. I rarely burn through that much.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's one of the nicest features on the smartwatches is when you're going down there, because I don't know about you, but I start talking to the person next to mm-hmm. me, yada, 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 and I keep my phone volume turned completely down, and then we get the zzz,
yep.
Oh, I've got something coming up here. I need to get off. Otherwise, I've blown past so many exits. It's ridiculous.
I do love that. And the other nice thing about as he shows the smartwatch, the nice thing about it, it's not wasting the battery because it's only doing it as like a notification. So when you're within a certain amount, when your smartphone's about to tell you in 2 miles, turn right on exit, blah, 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 that's when it pops up on your watch. And it's like, oh, a little buzz on your hand. It's like, okay, yeah, I got to do this. So, yeah, absolutely a good way to go. Now, for a manual way of going, and I was going to ask you geocaching-wise for you two gentlemen, geocaching routes. Now, geocaching routes, I've always had it where I will make a route from here to Florida, and I will, for whatever reason, never take the exact route that when I designed it, because something caught my eye over here, something caught my eye over there. How much real-time geocaching do you do with that, as opposed to actually saying on a route, these are specific caches I want to hit and go that way?
For me, it depends on how much time and how focused we are on getting there. You know, if we plan on taking around 12 hours to do that 8-hour trip, you know, I'm gonna make a ton of GPXs, which I did across western Texas, and I caught it and import them all into GSAC, and gonna have circles that are overlapping each other, and then boil all that down, and that's the GPX that I use on my Garmin, and that way, you know, I'm not limited to a 5-mile stretch along this particular road, because there's been so many times, like you said, we decided, oh, let's go check out this city here, or town here that we've never been to, and
there goes your route
on there, and you don't have data, or your data's poor because you're in a small little town, and you got GPRS data on your phone. It's like, I don't know if there is cash here or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes it interesting. Yeah. Now, this is something, one of the things that came with just as an off subject, with the Civil War Geo Trail that just opened up in North Carolina, when they had the kickoff event, they had in their goodie package there, and I haven't used this in a while, and I'd be kind of curious if you guys do, is it's a hanger that you put on your mirror or you put on your front dash that says, I'm geocaching. If you see this is the number that you can call in case of an emergency, or this is what you do to contact me, and you put it on your dash as kind of a heads up to whoever, you know, the police, whoever's, you know, notices that your car is sitting there, that you're in the area. Do you guys ever use something like that?
Yeah, I've used one. I've never seen it handed out, but we've laminated some just to use because we've always pulled over the side of roads and always just said, hey, please don't tow the car. We are geocaching. If you need to get a hold of me, here's my number. Please call before you do anything to my vehicle. Please.
Yes.
You know, so it's always nice to know, because when you leave, yeah, the worst thing you do is come back and your vehicle's gone because someone thought you abandoned it or something else.
Well, so. I like it the other way, because I've literally had epiphanies, and I use this all the time. There's one time where I was going again to Michigan, and I'm in the mountains of West Virginia. I got off an exit that had no name. I'm a mile off the freeway. I literally walk a mile in the forest, not woods, in the forest, in the mountains of West Virginia, find this beautiful, huge ammo box, and realize I am a mile from the frickin' car in the middle of nowhere in West Virginia. Who the heck's gonna know I'm here?
Yeah.
So yeah, those much as people go, "Eh, why should I put it up?" I would really put something up like that just cuz.
It's a good idea, and I think I'm going to take a little hint there from Corey and actually laminate up a card to do it. I mean, I put notes up there in the past, kind of scribbled on whatever I had, but have a kind of more of a permanent one that's telling, "Hey, I'm out geocaching. Here's my number." And possibly use one of those dry erase markers to even put a GC code on there, just in case there's someone that is a happy, good looking geocacher out there that actually wants to figure it out. Then that they might be able to actually.
But
come
they
out
have to
and
be happy and good looking, right?
Yes, exactly. Depending on if the bear found you or not. I'm just saying. Wow, I tell you. The last couple of things before we wrap up here. When you actually get, Chad, we're just at a mega where I'm going to Geo Woodstock this year and going that way. What are some of the hints that you want to tell for geocachers when you are traveling to an event? Some of the things that you want to remember when you actually get to the event and be prepared for, because most of the stuff that we've talked to today is exactly what you want to do when you're going to an event anyways. But there's some things that you should really be careful and aware of because that signal may not be there as much as you want on your cell phone for starts.
Yeah, you can run out of data in air. I've been to megas where the data has been very shoddy for a cell phone. So, make sure that you have your GPS or your phone set up for completely offline to do what you want. Otherwise, you're going to be sitting there searching for a signal. that's no good.
Yeah.
Especially when you're wanting to geocache. Get with people that you know, to go out and go caching with them. If you don't know anybody there and you're going,
just
find people.
Ask.
There's just ask, "Hey, is anyone going to do some trails out here? I'm interested in going along." We're geocachers. We're friendly. We don't bite too hard.
But yeah, you do have to take the initiative and really say to somebody, if you don't know, tell them. Geocachers love that because they will be more than glad to show you whatever
like,
you need
oh,
to
yeah.
know.
Come along. Come on. We know this cool trail over here. We're about ready to hit it. Let's go.
Yep. Bring your stick. Just saying.
And some of the best geocachers love some of the best local geocachers love to show off their local places of interest, and they would love to show you. And so, whenever, just say, "Hey, I'm new to the area. Where's your best caches?" And they will show you. They would be more than happy to show you.
A lot of times they will have lists right there for you. Saying, "Check them out." Yep, good stuff. Parking's a big thing. Depending on how they have it set up for a mega event, sometimes you can park once and that's about it. You're there for the day.
Do not move it because you'll lose your spot.
Yes,
exactly.
That goes. Other ones, it's been wide open and you can do what you want. A lot of the lab caches, depending on the parking, is going to tell you how many of those you're going to go to. So you just really need to prepare of what you want to get out of the event and focus on that, because a lot of times the events are so big you're not going to be able to do everything anyways. Pick your battles on what you want to accomplish with it, and then park and do things accordingly. Let's see. The other thing that always happens at every mega event that I've been to, if there are geocaches on the grounds for the mega event, basically forget about the idea, "I'm going to just go and find this geocache. It's easy. Don't worry about it." Usually each geocache has a line of people that want to
look for the gathering of people, signing a log sheet.
Yes.
Just go sign it and move on.
And,
yes.
Yeah, plan for it to take 10 to 30 minutes, depending on how large the group is.
Yeah. Yeah. When we talk to the guys at Geo Woodstock, there's some WVTIM geocaches there. These are gadget caches. These are caches that usually take 10, 15, 20 minutes to figure out by yourself. Multiply that by 8 billion people trying to do the same one. Be patient. Mm-hmm. And don't force them. Just saying, well, I can't open it. Take it easy. No, God, please. Just be gentle. If you don't know how to do something with any of these geocaches, not just Tim's, but just in general, if you don't understand, ask. They will tell you. They will help you. They will be glad to help you. So just kind of keep that in mind. Lab caches. If you've never done a lab cache before, they are a riot. The main thing that you want to understand is most lab caches at mega events are good for a couple of days. So if you're going to say, well, I'll come back and get it sometime, there's usually a couple of days that you've got and a time limit to go out there.
When you open up the their little web app, it will tell you what the when it's going to expire. It has a countdown on there.
Right.
Another thing there, download the GPX, use your GPS to get there, because the web app telling you how to get there, it sucks.
Yes, it's not the best at all. And if you have multiple people hitting the sites, especially when you're talking, you know, thousands of people at a shot, connectivity again is a huge huge issue with that. All right, guys. I think we've done a very good covering of travel tips for people when they're going to be out on the road. The main thing with this, folks, is be prepared. Enjoy yourselves. Have a good time going on your geocaching adventures. But we want you back. Be safe out there. And that's the whole reason for doing this show. Guys, got anything else that you want to mention that we haven't already? Alrighty, I'll take that as a no. Okay, folks, we appreciate you guys coming with us each and every week as we do the Geocaching Podcast. Please, if you would, if you go to geocachingpodcast.com, on the right-hand side of the website is our Please Support the Geocaching Podcast area, where we've got PayPal. If you got a few bucks, please send it our way. It literally helps keep the lights on and keeps the websites going. We greatly appreciate all the donations that come through there. And also, please tell other geocachers about our show so that I can come in and get some good geocaching information each and every week. Alrighty, let's move on. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast, right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Corey Stevens, and Chad Courtney. The show is copyright 2015 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.